Petso. Dave answers your questions about personal finance. He provides insight into making the most on your money using over 20 years of experience. Money Matters is brought to you in part by Petso Financial Consultants and Mountain West Bank, Idaho's community bank, with offices in Boise, Ketchum, and Coeur d'Alene. Dave Petso, the host of Money Matters, is a certified financial planner professional and an investment advisor representative with Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated. Registered representative securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Investment advisor representative Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated and Petso Financial Consultants are not affiliated companies. And now the host of Money Matters, Dave Petso.
Hello and good morning.
Well, that was a nice Bronco game. We have to start the show positively before we dive into the, you know, some of the negative things going on in the world of stocks. That was quite a turnaround. Quite a turnaround. As was the market. Now, I know we didn't finish up on our highs on Friday. In fact, the broad market actually finished down a little bit on Friday. Tiny bit. Dow gained 100 points, but it wasn't, it gave up most of its gains. But the overseas markets didn't. So stocks broadly, globally, were up after being down. Quite a turn. Yes, that's that volatility in the market and that people don't like. We just can't seem to enjoy the fact that markets do give us opportunities, both to sell high and to buy low, which, of course, as we have talked about many times, and I'll talk about in the second hour, study after study shows that people don't do this well. They actually, in fact, buy high and sell low and repeat the behavior and wonder why. You know, throwing stuff at the screen, cussing at the screen, and how the market is rigged. It's not. Sure, there are crooks on Wall Street. There are crooked doctors that overprescribe medications. There are crooked attorneys that push old people into trusts that they don't need. It doesn't matter what industry it is. There always are people that are, operating outside, let's say, ethical. Because I think that's really the measure, isn't it? Isn't it? Because somebody can get away with it legally, is that okay? I know it's okay for the Clintons, but beyond the Clintons, is it really okay? Is that how you pick your professional? Nobody does, right? I mean, we don't do that. So when I say that, I mean ethical, outside those bounds. When we look at the market and we think of it from a standpoint of every time it goes down, gives us an opportunity to look at, you don't have to act on it, but to look at businesses you liked the day before, the month before, the year before, at significantly higher prices. You liked it then. And it goes down and gives us an opportunity to buy. But we don't accept that. And the weirdness that I find this very strange. And I've talked about this a lot. And I understand the idea of, seeing what is moving in the market and things like that. But the idea that every day you would check your net worth as a measure of how you're doing, it's kind of like, see, human nature, this is bad for human nature. Sure, there are people that they can do that. But it's bad for human nature. It's bad for us because we already want to desperately overtrade. We desperately feel like we should be doing stuff when the smartest thing is to sit on your hands. Warren Buffett, Charlie Munger, they talk about this in so many different ways, right? Right? Charlie says, Warren and I were born with the patient gene. We have patience. He goes on to say that very few people do. They consider it to be one of the absolute cornerstones of why they're good at what they do. Not you should see Warren's brain power. You should see when the two of us get together, it just smoke comes out of our ears because our brains are working so big time. No. They say, we're patient. We're patient. I know. I'm sorry. I know. You're looking for a kernel of investment wisdom, some way in this market of volatility to go, wow, I've got it. Now I know how to make $1 zillion trading Apple. Or I can do some stop thingies on this and put it into an annuity and, wow, I'll have $1 zillion because they can tell you anything they want. There's no laws that apply to them. You know that's not true. And we know we have to be more patient in a world that is screaming at you to be impatient. I mean, doesn't it strike anybody? It strikes me that we have several hours worth of programming before the market opens, blabbering about if the Fed increases interest rates. Or what about the Chinese, this or that? Blah, 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 blah. Finally, we open up the market. So they can report what's going on. And everybody, you know, and they got little tickers in the corner once in a while because it's like countdown to when Janet Yellen speaks. Countdown to when we are going to have some employment numbers. Unbelievable. But it goes on. Just everybody's, they're bated breath. And then finally the market closes, and probably not much happened, really no news, but we, you know, we had this pounded at us all day long, like, wow, isn't this exciting? And then the market closes, and then that's not enough programming for people. We have to go to fast money, and then we go to mad money, where we're taught that we should be having some kind of bullish spreads, and I really like this trade. What about you, Mac? What about you, Joe? What about you, Pete? What about you, Bob? And they're back and forth. This banner, it just drives me nuts. It's nutty. It's nutty. And the thing is, they never have to explain actually how their trading is doing. Because, you see, they don't actually manage vast amounts of money. They don't. They don't. They just are talking heads. They're really good at talking about the markets. Apparently, they're not really good investors. But then we go on to mad money. And it's, well, it's kind of, oh, I love you, booyah, bye-bye-bye, ta-ta-ta, bye-bye-bye, ta-ta-ta. And then when you get into this kind of a mentality, this is what then we do. Okay, whoo. All right, now you know what I need to do? I better check my net worth. Even though all of the time, we recognize completely that that's not our human nature. That's good. That's not good for our human nature. Our human nature is to do stuff. Our human nature is to be fearful. Our human nature is not to believe that things work out, even though all of history says it does. That's not what we believe. So when we're in the heat of this volatility, we want to check our net worth statement, which does what? Is that where we look at it? We go, you know, I'm down quite a bit today. I think I should add to my positions. No. No, that's not really what people do. I wonder how, if this keeps up, how we're going to pay our bills. Yeah. I wonder if we're in trouble here. I don't know if this keeps up. Does that lead you to be thinking I would be thinking of taking advantage of dips to add to positions in companies that I loved 20%, say, higher priced? No, it doesn't. It doesn't change the fact that Procter & Gamble raised its dividends again this year, 58 years in a row. But the stock price is down, so your net worth is down. If you sell. But by looking at it every day, and having all these inputs every day, are human beings able to deal with this? And of course the answer is no. 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 I mean, you wouldn't say, you know, I think you should, you need to quit smoking. I agree. I'm going to quit smoking. But I'm going to walk around with this pack of cigarettes in my pocket just to prove how tough I am. Okay. Why would you do that? Kind of makes it hard, doesn't it? Harder? Kind of reminds you constantly. And then if you have a weak moment, you just might, you know, like, well, I could just have one. Just have, you know, or chewing tobacco. I just have one dip, you know. It's not a big deal. Just one today. I mean, why do we put this in front of us? Why do we make it hard? It's already hard. It's hard to tune out a noisy world. Because the fact of the matter is no matter how many times I say this, people are news junkies. Even though it's bad for them, even though it makes them feel bad, even if it makes them think of weird stuff, you know, Shemitahs and blood moons and conspiracy theories and stuff. It's just bizarre things. The way they dig deeper in, like, you know, yeah, I think I'm going to spend my next 45 minutes watching this weirdo video about the end of the dollar from some people I don't know anything about. But you know, this Stansberry research, I mean, they haven't been right for 20 years, so maybe they're due to be right. That could be it, yeah. I think that's what I'll do. I'm going to read the Doomsday Digest out there, because somebody's bound to be right sometime. I know they never have been, but maybe, you know, I just like to read that news. Why? Why? Why do we do that? Well, were you supposed to put your head in the sand? No, you can't do that anyway. Because they'll pipe in news to you under the sand anyway. You can't stop the flow, but you can slow it down. You can take time to go back to the basics like we've been trying to do for months now. Just some basic thoughts. Because here's what happens. So you've got Jim Cramer recently. He's gotten some, you know, I don't know what happened. He's gotten really weird lately. I know he never was like balanced, but still, it's gotten really weird. And I've mentioned this before. There's a blog I subscribe to, and he's one of the writers on it. So I've enjoyed his writings over the years, some of his analysis, but it's getting worse. And I may, in fact, you know, just stop reading them altogether. And there are times when I don't, because He seems to have gotten caught up in this, I have to be right every day. And that's when you're trying to call the market every day, you're not going to get it right all the time. But pretending that you're getting it right all the time is a silly game. And now, lately, there's no pretending he can do because he's gotten it dead wrong. He was bullish coming into this, and then when it started turning down, he's gotten super duper duper negative, which is classic for him, classic for most market commentators. They pretend to be really bullish when the market's going up, and then the next day when it's going down, they're scratching their beards and just, you know, it's nothing good going on in the whole wide world. They're like emotional little girls. This is actually kind of like what some people do, is to watch this as if they were getting information on how to manage their portfolios. It's not at all helpful. So as we go through this and you watch people do this, and then they become married to an idea. The Federal Reserve can't raise interest rates. Can't. The world's going to tank. And then they don't, and the markets go down badly. So now what do? You've been wrong, and you made this bold statement. So just as perfect cognitive dissonance. Here we go. I know. I wasn't wrong. this is how great it is. This proves how much the market would have gone down. No, actually, it doesn't prove anything. But you're right. I can't disprove your theory now, because we didn't do that. It's like trying to prove or disprove God. You either believe that, and so therefore he exists, or you don't. This is not a way to prove. You know, you can't put a petri dish out. So if we don't go that direction, it's like the people are like, well, you know, if they would have just let this happen. Yeah, 6 years. Well, we didn't. So it's just a theory, and I can't prove you're wrong. I can't prove that you're wrong. That it was a good idea to bail out the banks. We should have let them all go. That seems silly to me. But I can't prove you're wrong. Because we didn't do that. So, now we're stuck. Totally stuck. In our cognitive dissonance world, where we just know we're so right that we can't even stop. So it goes to the point where he actually got in a fight here. I didn't see it, but I heard about it. He got in a fight with apparently with one of the Federal Reserve guys. And I can't remember, but finally, Bullard, I think his name is. This isn't the words, right? But it was like this. It's one of those perfect little things where he says, you're a bore. He said that to Cramer. You're like a bore. And it was just shocking. So now he's got nothing to do. And he turns around because he's been screaming about this. And so now he's going to the camp that we should raise interest rates to get the uncertainty over with. He boxed himself in because he just wouldn't be wrong because he's just a market commentator. It's silliness. But we get caught up in our own greatness of being able to call things. Even when you can't call things. So through all this noise, one of the things that keeps coming up, and it's not just Cramer, is that when we raise interest rates, that's it. Stocks are going to tank. Commodities are going to blah, 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 blah. Everything's down. Everything's done. So I just look at the numbers. That's all. From super low interest rates, which we are at, when we look at the stock market 12 months from now, when interest rates are raised, 100% of the time, the stock market has gone up. All right. Do I know it's going to go up this time? No, I don't. I don't. I do not know the future. But to proclaim that you do know, and that dozens of times before, it's gone the opposite way, that's a big call. That's a big call. Look, when markets are in turmoil, and it's perfectly normal, we'll talk about that some more, it's totally normal. But this is completely normal. Regardless of how you feel, regardless of what you're reading, this is normal. Stocks don't go up every single day, every single year. As a matter of fact, I'll share with you today some more interesting numbers. They are interesting. Hey, come on, let's face it. I'm trying to find the good, interesting numbers for you. The teaching numbers, if you will. The aha numbers, if you will. The numbers like this. Different. Oh, you mean really? Seriously? 100% of the time, the market's gone up. Uh-huh. That's right. When they raised interest rate, really? That's not where. 100%, yes. From low levels, that's correct. 100% of the time. Doesn't mean it's going to happen this time. But it always has in the past. Always. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. And I did want to mention this real quick before we jump off here. A great email. I was going to save it for the education segment, talking about passive versus active and giving some additional data, which, of course, I know for some of you, you're just like you're tired of it because I give data on this all the time. But this email said that there wasn't any, there wasn't as much data, I guess, as they wanted about the analysis. So, but I left all that at the office yesterday. I thought I'd put it inside my folder here. I didn't. So we're going to have to wait a week because I just, you know, those numbers are, hey, they're, I'm pretty close. I got it in my head. I've talked about it a zillion times. But I really want to also take a little twist on that as well. There's some new thoughts out about passive versus active that I'd really wanted to dig into, especially for those of you who are drawing income. All right, our number is 580-KIDO. It is Dave at PetzoFinancial.net. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436. Matters with Dave Petzo on 580-KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello, welcome, and thanks for joining us. 580-5436 is our number if you would like to participate, and I would like you to participate. That would be awesome. It's Dave at PetzoFinancial.net if you prefer email, and that's fine too. So do give us a call. Ring us up. We would love to hear from you. Now, just to kind of solidify what we've been talking about, I'm going back to a Dalbar study, okay, just because it's important. Because it's easily dismissed until you just really dig into the numbers. It's easily dismissed, too, in our own persona, about how we feel about how well we do trading, how well we feel about us and our ability to sustain, to behave correctly, even though we open up the floodgates and we want all the data flowing in. Well, we don't really know what the data means, but we just take it all in. Because somehow that's where we think. We think that would be helpful to have more and more data. And, of course, you need some data, but we also need time to reflect, and we also have to have a context to put that data in to understand what it means and what to do with it. But we think we're all above that. We think we're all above trading. We think we're all above, I'm not like the average guy. I'm brilliant. I'm just brilliant. I can look at my portfolio every day and not be worried about it. I don't want to overtrade, even though I just have all these inputs of buy, 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 sell, sell, sell. I'm not bothered when I go on the internet, go down the little wormholes of doom and gloom here, leading to that one there, leading to this one here, throw the guy on the sucker list over here, and they just have this constant doom and gloom coming in. But I'm above that because I can, like, walk on water. Nothing affects me. It's easy for us to think that way. And when we're having a good day, you're right. You're right. Temptation of any kind. When everything's groovy in your life, that's easy to avoid. When we get tired, when we get stressed, which is pretty much some periods of every day, right? Or certainly a lot of our lives. It's harder. But when I think about this, and I think about this for me, I'm not talking about you, so you don't have to be defensive. I'm talking about the average guy. I'm throwing myself in that category. Here's what happened. From 1994 to 2014, 20 years. Now remember, this is a 20-year period that was rocking good. I mean, super good in the 90s. And then two of the worst bear markets of your life after that. But overall, the market averaged right about 10%, 9.85. So $100,000 put in 1994 and left alone would have grown to $654,000. The average investor dollar, because we're smart and we can move stuff around with a phone call, click of a switch, boom. We can change it, man. So we know what's good. We can follow kind of some momentum. Maybe we can do some of those stop-loss trailing thingies or whatever we're supposed to do, right? Because it's down 10%, so we can pop out, and then we can, I don't know when we get back in, but play along with me. So we can do that, or we can do some of this over here. We always know when there's a Shemitah coming or a blood moon. And we can avoid those. We can get in and out. And, I mean, with computer age and everything else, we are just so smart. The average investor did just over 5. So $100,000 turns into $275,000 instead of $654,000 in our own sheer brilliance. That's the average investor dollar. Now, what do you say? Investor dollar. What does that mean? Is that kind of like a weird way of putting it? No, it's not a weird way of putting it. It's what the average dollar buying mutual funds did. Because it moved in and out. And by the way, if you're thinking that's because it's active investment versus passive, that's not true at all. That includes putting it in passive mutual funds, for crying out loud. It's just the movement of people outsmarting the market. And how did that work for them? They lost $380,000. That's how it worked. On $100,000. That's how much they lost. Well, what about fixed investment, like bond investors? Yeah, this is really great stuff. Because people, it's easier to predict rising and falling interest rates, right? Apparently not. Because the last 20 years, in a declining interest rate environment, which, again, to go back to basics, that's really good for bonds. So the index, which, you know, for bonds, went up 6%. Pretty good for bonds. I mean, bonds are not supposed to do what stocks do, and they don't. Big surprise. 6.2%. So 100,000 became 333,000. But the average fixed income investor, passive, not passive, in mutual funds, the average dollar, only grew by 0.8%, less than 1%. Less than 1%. Moving in, moving out. It doesn't matter if it's bonds. It doesn't matter if it's stocks. We are not patient people. We are not designed to do this. Stop it. Stop it. You're not above this. I'm not above this. This is a lot harder for human beings than we ever think it is. No, this isn't climbing Mount Everest, but it is climbing Mount Everest of your emotions. This is hard. Harder than we give it credit for, which is why I think we continue to fail so much. Look at this as your enemy. This is it. This gets no more difficult than you controlling you. Wow. That's hard to do. I got my stuff. You got your stuff. Other people have their stuff. What's easy for me may be hard for you and vice versa. That's always true in life. But we all have a tendency to think we're better and smarter than we are. This is the hardest, easiest thing in the world. When you stop and you think about it, you can buy the greatest businesses in the world for sale every day. And sometimes they get a markdown and you can go in at a significant discount. And nothing on the planet grows as much as this. Nothing is as good an investment. And you're not even allowed to do anything except collect dividends. That's it. I mean, it's so unbelievable. What a thing. You put money in, you even get rich. You put more money in, you get richer. What? Yeah, that's what you do. You just put money away every month. And you get rich. Really? Yeah. Unless you pay too much attention. Because then you'll buy and sell at the wrong times. Well, why would I do that? That's so silly. Who thinks I'm going to put money in and then when it goes down, I'm going to sell it? I mean, who would do that? Us. All of us. All of us. That's what we do. It's so important to put this as, wow, this is really hard. Don't let me see this as easy. This is really hard. This is the heavy lifting. I have to control me. I do not have to project and think I know what the future is. I guess I don't. I don't have to read about somebody who says they do because they don't either. I'm over that. This is hard. And all I have to do is focus 100% of my energy on this thing. Me. Don't let me misbehave. And you'll be successful. All studies show it. Time and time again. And you know what, unfortunately, though, what all studies show? We're not getting any better at this. We know this. We've studied this for years. And investors are getting no better at understanding the simple fact. Your performance is based on your behavior. Not your stock picking ability. Not your mutual fund picking ability. Not your mutual fund managers. You. And by the way, your advisor too. Because if they're bouncing around all the time, you're right, we need to change this. We need to go here. Blah, 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 blah. Not good. Not good. All right. We need your phone calls, and I got to take a break for Fox News. When we come back, please do give us a call, 580-KIDO, dave@petzofinancial.net. If you prefer email, we'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's place to talk. On 580-KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello, welcome, and thanks again for joining us. I sure wish you would join us on the phone. That would be really awesome. It's 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Speaking of awesome, it was an awesome tailgate party last night. It was so fun. We like to do that with our clients. It's just so much fun to get together, cheer on the Broncos. Just great, great stuff. So thanks for those of you who came out last night. It was just absolutely fantastic. It was just we love it. We love it. And love to watch the Broncos play as well as they did. That was absolutely fantastic. You know, I was talking about this before. I touched on this in the past, and I've said it's normal. But anyway, volatility is normal. It's normal. It's certain to occur over and over again all the days of our lives. We all say volatility. Volatility implies up and down. No, it doesn't. Volatility means down. That's what it always means. It's what everybody talks about, volatility. I know, but it's really all about down. Because somebody says, man, I just don't like this upward volatility. I guess short sellers do say that, but that's not us. I mean, hardly anybody's a short seller. It's normal. And as we look at what normal is, you know what normal is? Normal average year to year drops from the high are 14%, 14.4 to be exact. That goes back since 1980. So as we look at it, we go, oh, we're getting back to normal. We are almost up to the average for this year. From the peak in May to the bottom is over 10%. It's not over the average, however. What we've had for the past 3 years is below average volatility. It's normal. There's never a year. We think about this is a crazy thing. But since 1980, and I bet this goes all the way back, but there's never been a year that you do not have some decline from the absolute peak. Otherwise, it would mean the market went up all year long, finished on the absolute high. But certainly since 1980, there is not a year on here that does not have a red number. Not one. And some of them are big. Some of them are huge. 20, 30, even 49% off of the high. Some drops are big, but there's always a drop. Volatility is normal. But when we sit plugged in, watching TV and watching people parade around with their hair on fire, it doesn't feel that way, does it? It really is important to disconnect just a little bit. Our number is 580-KIDO. Let's go to Dean in Payette. Dean, thanks for calling.
Dave, good to talk to you, by the way.
Good to talk to you.
I was talking to my Eddie Jones guy the other day, and he said something that I never thought of before. He said, well, you got to realize that when there's a big sell-off, there's an equally smart guy that's buying it and thinks it's on a discount. So somebody's buying this stuff when it goes down, which kind of makes you feel better about it. It's not, you know, it's not just that it's, you know, the sky's falling, like you say, but
mm-hmm.
somebody's buying it. Somebody's investing in it. So it's a good thing. Or, you know, it's, like you say, it's a normal thing. And one other thing, the guy advertising the safe money insurance.
Right. Yep.
You know, you need it. I don't know how often you hit it because I missed you for a few, you know, you're on earlier before I turned radio on a lot of times.
Gotcha.
But that guy does make you wonder a lot and you need to keep hammering that. Yeah, but you ain't going to get a good upside. So.
Right. They cap your upside so you can't win. You know, it is. It's one of those things, Dean, that it's very, very hard because I think we ought to have the rules of engagement as they are in securities. They are this way in securities. It's not a question of legal. It's also a question of ethical disclosures or full disclosure. That's part of the law. It's not that you can put on a prospectus on, you know, page 4 or 40 or whatever of a prospectus, this great takeaway of the fact of whatever it is you say. What I say, I'm bound to. You're not in the insurance world. What you can make outrageous statements. I can't do that. My CFP would go away. FINRA would be on my door. SEC on the RIA side. All that stuff. You can't do that. You can't just get away with it legally. But on the insurance side, they can make the most outrageous non-disclosed claims. Oh, the insurance company pays me. I don't have to worry about that. No, it comes out of whatever you're putting in, so the insurance company can pay you. We would all have to. If you have a securities license, you would have to disclose that. So the lack of disclosure is very troubling to me on those. I do try to talk about it, and I thank you for bringing that up again.
Hey, have a great weekend.
Hey, Dean. Great point also, by the way. I appreciate your financial advisor mentioning that and you sharing it with us. That's a great point. It really is. It's not that people are markets go down and they find a natural buyer as they discount. That's what makes a market, a buyer and a seller on each side of the trade. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. We're going to take our final break, and I do hope you will give us a call. Our board is clear. Give us a ring. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's place to talk. Money Matters with Dave Petzo on 580 KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello, welcome, and thanks for joining us. 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Okay, I'm going to set aside all the Dalbar studies and stuff like that for right now. But you know, they'll come up over and over again because, again, our behavior is everything. But I wanted to share one more little tidbit, okay? Just one more tiny one, okay? Over half of all the people that owned the greatest mutual fund ever lost money. This is Fidelity's own study on money flows in and out of Fidelity Magellan when Peter Lynch, and only that time frame, when Peter Lynch was on fire for like that 15-year period where he just crushed it. How can you lose money? How's that possible? Oh, that's right. We behave badly, and behavior is where our returns are derived. Let's quickly go to the phones. Jim, hey, sorry, I don't have much time. I've only got about a minute and a half, buddy.
Morning, Dave. How are you doing?
Good. I'm great.
Yeah, you were mentioning advisors, and Dean mentioned Edward Jones. Well, anyway, you know, advisors' job is to so-called advise. And take for example, you know, one company, Hershey's, which, you know, I have fond memories of. They've been around a long time, and I ate Hershey candy bars way back when I was a kid. Well, anyway, they might say, for instance, the cocoa prices in Brazil is up, so they recommend to sell. And for a long time, they did recommend to sell. Of course, I don't pay any attention to them. So, I mean, you know, now I think they've gone to hold or whatever, you know.
Right.
But at any rate, and you were talking about brilliance. Well, my record is better than my advisors and or Edward Jones. So
that's because you're just ignoring all the outside noise, right?
Yep.
Activity does not mean you're doing stuff.
Well, you know, the thing is, it's the chicken or the egg. What causes what? You know, do conditions cause, for instance, a price to go down, or do advisories advise people to sell, therefore they do, therefore the prices go down?
That's good, but that's a little of both. Jim, I'm sorry. Let's continue this in the next hour, but I've got to take a break for Fox News, okay? Thanks. Talk to you later. Bye-bye. We'll be back for hour two after this.
Eat or do business. Get great local deals at SeizeTheDeal.com. Enjoy an average savings of up to half off. All local businesses, always big savings. That's Seize the Deal.
Discover a truly delightful Nepali dining experience at Mount Everest Momo Cafe on Broadway. Mount Everest Momo Cafe brings you a taste of Nepal's rich culinary heritage. Momo dumplings, chicken and lamb chow chow, butter chicken, chicken korma, chicken tikka masala, chicken curry, and fresh naan breads made daily. Mount Everest Momo Cafe offers the best Himalayan, Nepali, Tibetan, and Indian food in the valley. Open Monday through Saturday for lunch from 11 to 2:30 and for dinner from 5 to 9. On Broadway, south of Boise Avenue, Mount Everest Momo Cafe.
This week's deal goes on sale Friday at 10 a.m. Just go to SeizeTheDeal.com to discover something new and maximize your savings up to...
Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. This is hour number two of Money Matters. I'm Dave Pezzo, and of course, these are my opinions only. It's not the station, it's not my broker-dealer. And we're not here to tell you what to buy, and sell. Sometimes we'll use an example. We'll talk about a stock, a local stock like Micron. Doesn't mean you should own it. I don't know what your portfolio looks like, what your risk tolerance is, all those things. I mean, you should never act on those things. As we've always said, constantly saying, telling you, hey, come on, this is the easiest, hardest thing to do. You certainly shouldn't be buying and selling. That's just crazy. You know, we often talk about, right, but I've shared so many times, right, my 10 investment commandments. Why are they my 10 investment commandments? Because I need constant reminder. I mean, they're right here in front of me, right here. We talked about one of them last hour. Actually, probably hit on three or four of them, frankly. Well, I can already see we've hit on three. But patience is what we don't have any patience. People have none. We expect to get rich quickly. We want some momentum thing, but we won't want to lose. I mean, literally, you will hear people say this often. You know, I don't want to get zero returns here, but I really don't want to take any risk. I don't have any time. I don't have this. Okay. Well, what you're saying is absolutely not possible. Not in a zero interest rate environment. Well, you know what I mean. I mean, it's like, you know, no, I don't know what you mean. You have to be able to tolerate mild fluctuations to have a mild return. I mean, not a good return, just some return today. Well, but, you know, I mean, if you see things like now we're reacting to what's already happened. You don't do that. You don't do that. We can't guess the future, but we want to try to position ourselves in those things that are cheap. And we want to position out of or rebalance regularly. We want to balance out of some of our profits in areas that have gotten expensive. But you see, what people do is they make these big, broad statements like, stocks are expensive. Hi, I'm, you know, Schiller, and I say it's expensive. It's been expensive for 5 years ago, 4 years ago, 3 years ago, 2 years ago, and now we're getting some market correction, so I get a lot of TV time right now to say what I've said for a really, really, okay, so thousands of points have been wrong, but I've been right for the last, you know, thousand down. I've been right. Okay, so parade them around. But my point is, what relative to what? What is it expensive relative to? To cash? Is cash too expensive? It's earning zero. That sounds expensive. Bonds, 2% 10-year treasury, that sounds really expensive to me. Relative to what? Well, what are we? Isn't it relative? The money will flow to somewhere? Anyway. What sometimes goes as wisdom is clearly just noise. And so we're not here to give you more noise. We're here to talk about it so we can help each other, right? These Ten Commandments aren't for you. They're for me. I just share them. Take them or leave them. You don't want to have patience? Okay. Trade like Kramer would have you trade. Bye, bye, bye. Sell, sell, sell. Have at it. Good luck. It just doesn't work for me. It doesn't make any sense to me. It hasn't worked historically. And all the great investors from John Templeton to Peter Lynch to Michael Price to Warren Buffett don't do that either. They don't make big bets. Like, they make incremental changes. Small changes. They don't say, I think the market is high, so I'm going to sell everything and go to cash. They don't do that. They may let some of the dividends build up, or when they think a stock has hit its peak price and they finally do sell. But they may not put that back to work right away if they don't find bargains out there. But they don't just sell everything. Do you think Warren Buffett just sits around and wonders what to buy and sell every day? I don't either. I don't think he thinks that noise is information, and he certainly doesn't think information is wisdom. Does he? These are my commands. See, this is what I remind myself. I remind myself, if you're thinking forward, I don't want to chase around for things. Because here's the bottom line. What's currently working is going to stop working. And what's not working will start working. And then months or even years from now, we'll recognize that. And people will run around and go, wow, passive management really beats active management. You know, I really only think you should buy the S&P 500. You should never invest overseas. Or, like a few years ago, when overseas markets were doing far better than the U.S., what were people saying? You have to have a globally diversified portfolio, or you're a moron. But we already know, what we already see that's gone past us is perfectly clear. Duh. So what we take as information, we're going to glean knowledge from, is somebody giving us a historic report of what we all already know. With absolutely no forethought. None. And it just plays to our own human nature again. So what we have to tell ourselves is don't do that. Don't do that. Think forward, not through the rearview mirror. Do not govern your investments by the rearview mirror. It may take a while to change. But the idea that everything's going to be like it was this past week, well, that's just crazy. That's not true. And so what is working won't. So as we talk about all the things that we know, that the S&P 500 has been the only major index globally that's done really well for the last couple of years. I mean, not this year, but we're not ready to throw it away. I'm just saying, overall return over the last, say, 3 years, you should only own the biggest U.S.-only stocks, period. Own nothing else in your portfolio. Pure genius. Who does that? The media does. Makes it feel that way. Well, you really should just be a passive investor and buy the S&P 500 because that's what you should do. Okay. But what we'll find is that won't work as we look back over some period of time. Because whatever's working now will stop working. And what isn't working will start working. And then we'll make the same opposite whatever arguments in 3 years or 5 years. This may continue for a while. I don't know. And that's why the best and healthiest thing is that I don't know what the future is going to bring. So we stay balanced and diversified. But when you do, then your emotions kind of well up like, I don't know if I should be doing this anymore. I don't know if it makes sense to be, you know, buying small caps and stuff. Maybe I shouldn't be buying dividend-paying stocks because, you know, it's the growth things that are working over here now. Maybe I shouldn't own any emerging markets anymore. Maybe I should be momentum investing. Maybe I should do that stop-loss thingy. Maybe I should buy into the idea that you really can have stock market returns without risk. Even though I know I can't, I don't know. I just kind of give up. I don't want to do that anymore. We do start thinking like that unless we remind ourselves always, what's working today is going to stop working. And what isn't working will. Things return to the mean, right? I mean, things, they just don't do it on our timetable. But they do do it. They do do it. If we don't succumb to our own emotions of like, I'm missing out on this. I'm missing out on this. Right? And we keep positioning money. We stay with the plan. We have discipline. Oh, I hate that word, too. I know. I hate that word. I hate that word, discipline. It means when I don't want to, I have to get out of bed. When I don't want to. I really don't want to get up and go. I don't want to go work out. I would like to have another beer, a piece of cake. Okay, we all get that discipline. That's easy. That's easy because we can point fingers at everybody else. But do we have the discipline to keep adding to your investments when they're down? Do you have the discipline not to change your strategy, your perfectly well thought out strategy? Now, just for a little while, because you know things are really bad, you just want to put a little extra cash inside. And you start trading. And you've entered the dark side. Do you have the discipline to not do that? I get that we all get we're not supposed to have too much cake. But do you get that you shouldn't trade too much? Do you really have the discipline when it is really hard? When you're in a bear market? When the stuff you were buying just keeps going down? Happens to all people, all investors, multiple times in their lifetime. And it will continue to happen to you. Do you have the discipline for that? I know I don't, unless I remind myself to think about these things all the time. What are your investment commandments? What do you need to focus on? Where do you go wrong? What do you need a little sticker on your computer screen? Don't look. Don't look. All you do is you get grumpy. Then don't look. All you do is think, should I be doing different things than your well thought out, you were happy before plan? Then don't look. Whatever it is for you, it may be a little thing to me, and it's a big thing to you. And my big things, you can't even imagine why I have trouble dealing with that. Because we're all wired so differently. But underlying all of that is the fact that human beings are nothing but skin-wrapped emotion. That's what we are. That's the way God wired us. I don't know why, but it's true. And it makes us really bad investors. Really bad. We are naturally horrible. And I don't know how many different ways and different studies I can share with you to show that you and I suck. We are horrible. Because we're emotional. We are so bad. We want to hit a home run over here, and then we want to hide under a rock over there. We get aggressive over here. Then we say, I'm really scared to death. I just want to pull it out and stay on the sidelines. Help me. And that's really what we are. We're just emotional creatures. And we get excited about something and a new idea. And I'm going to go so rich. I'm going to make $1 million on this. $10,000 I've invested in Microsoft would be worth $1 zillion today. I'm going to, here's the next one. With little thought. When we have a perfectly thought out plan, the easiest thing in the whole wide world, put money in the greatest businesses of the world and you get rich. That's the whole thing. But we can't because we're all emotional. That's the underlying thing. So we have to try to fight that. And part of that emotion is understanding that whatever is working now, whatever the current thought of the world is, the dollar will strengthen forever. That'll stop. We will recognize that it stopped when we look back over some period of time. And we've missed the turn, like we always do. And then we're starting to buy into the weak dollar. Oil is going to go down forever. Or is it? And then when it doesn't, I don't know why I didn't pick up some of those big giant oil companies when they were low. Because we're emotional. And that's not telling you we're done falling on oil or you should buy oil companies. Just in a current example. Emerging markets. You've got to buy emerging markets until you don't, and then it's a dumb idea, and then you need to... Sector after sector, stock after stock. Country after country. Remember when we had to own Japan? Had to. They were taking over the world. John Templeton had no money in his global fund in Japan for a year before it changed. Fortune magazine put him on the cover as he's lost his touch. 6 months later, all three of the global funds that he managed were in the top five. Patience. Know what you're doing. Stick with your knitting. Stay balanced. Stay diversified. All these things are hard. They're hard when you're in the storm. They are hard. That's where it comes in. That's why your reminders are there. We are all emotional. We all move the wrong way. We want to move the wrong way. It's who we are. And the sooner we recognize that is our underlying human flaw. For running money, it is. For love and relationships, it's awesome. We can feel each other. We sense each other. We love each other. That's an awesome thing. But you don't want to love stocks. You don't want to love action. You don't want to love bouncing around and bouncing back and forth. That's bad for your investments. So it's not that we're bad. It's that we're bad at this thing over here. So let's remember that when we're thinking about this. What do we do? And I know in this whole thing we're going back to basics, and I'm talking about the 10 investment commandments. Why did I create that? Think about doing some of your own. Think about what really triggers you. And avoid that. Or at least remind yourself. Put it up right there on the computer screen. Right there. This is what my tendency is. This is my big step problem. May not be yours, but this is mine. And we put it there and we put it in front of us, and I really believe it'll help us be better investors, less emotional. Life will be funner when we don't put this stuff in front of ourselves every day as if it's some kind of a burden. Oh, I have money. I don't know what to do. It's such a burden that I have. I have $1 million. I don't even know. God, it's just, I'm so scared of everything in my life. If you didn't have $1 million, you wouldn't be scared of this stuff. So why, if we have something we want so much, right, which is financial security, we want money, that we then turn it into a burden? Sometimes we do. Sometimes our gifts become our burdens, don't they? And I know for those of you who are saying, yeah, buts, and I know there's lots of yeah, buts. There's got to be lots of yeah, buts. I'm not being a wild-eyed optimist here. This is going to be a harder one for you to put me in the Pollyanna box that so many people like to do. He's just a wild-eyed optimist. Yeah, you know what? Yeah, it's a good life. It's a hard life, full of emotional turmoil, difficult times. But it's a really good life. It's amazingly abundant life. Already, I'm in my early 50s, already I've outlived the life expectancy of less than 100 years ago. Isn't that crazy? And I feel like I'm running around like a little kid. Still, I feel young. And I know sometimes our brains fool ourselves, but that's a good thing. Not everything around us has to be a bad thing. It's a good thing. But we have to control our emotions and create our money, separate it from the emotional side of us. And when we think that this is an easy thing, that I just need a little more information, we kid ourselves and we make it harder on ourselves. This is it. This is the big pinnacle. This is the top of the mountain. If you control your emotions, you control your actions, you have a great chance at a financial future full of peace and profits. Our number is 580-5436-580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetzoFinancial.net. Please do give us a call. I'd love to fill this hour full of your thoughts, your questions. So let's start ringing them up right now. Anything, anything. Let's talk. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436-PETZO on 580-KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello, welcome, and thanks for joining us. Now, it is your opportunity, your job, actually, your responsibility to call with your questions, your comments. It's 580-5436-580-KIDO, or you can email them, Dave at PetzoFinancial.net. Let's start there while everybody's tapping and punching the numbers on their phone to start the dialogue. Hi, Dave. I will be inheriting farmland with my siblings. My brother will buy the land. Would it make sense to continue to hold a share of the land instead of taking cash? It would be about half my retirement assets. I feel quality farmland would be a good hedge against the messy financial status of the USA and the world. Thanks. Joe, thank you. Thank you, and great. This I can go into this for 30 minutes, okay, because there's so many different actual angles here. But let's talk about it from a standpoint. Do I want half of my retirement assets in one, not even one asset class, one farm? No, I don't. Period. Under-diversified makes no sense. And it's illiquid. Can't get out. But here's further. I think it's that's just a side. I don't want it anyway. Here's why. Is it a good hedge against the retirement or against the financial mess? I don't really think so. I think you can create a hedge better. You know, hedging meaning diversifying, better. Okay, with things that aren't stuck. You're not stuck with. You're not stuck with what happens to your farm in a hailstorm or whatever, flooding, tornadoes, whatever. Just a bad crop. I don't know. A blight. I don't know what happens. Boom. But also when we think about it, let's just look at the long-term nature of land. It's a bad investment. It's not been a good investment at all. So the real returns after inflation are nominal, and in many cases, especially when it comes to farmland and more remote locations, it's negative return. Negative return. So I don't want that. I don't. Don't want it at all. Now, if you're talking about, well, we're going to farm for a little while, it's pretty near a big booming town like Boise, different. That has potential to be what you would call land banking. Right? So later you could sell the land for a profit because the city's moving towards you, for example. Okay, it's absolutely. Those are cases different. Different cases. But we're talking about pure farmland. I want to add one more thing. One more thing to this. There are now many buildings in construction, and many have finished construction. To grow crops 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. No pesticides. Controlled conditions. Some of them in farm communities. I think it's just the beginning of this. Now, I'm not saying that the farms are going to dry up in the next 5 years. But I don't think the outlook for farmland, not just because the recent outlook with crop, with the prices of crops coming down, but the ability to grow 24 hours a day, 7 days a week in a controlled environment all around and not ship the corn from Iowa. Grow it in New York. Grow it in San Francisco. Grow it in Texas. And maybe they can't really do corn effectively. I don't know. I do know they're doing tomatoes like crazy. I don't know what crops are perfect for that. I just know we have to be aware that with technology, things are changing very fast. And I like the ability to maybe get out of things when I want to get out. So no, the answer is no. I wouldn't want to do that from a historic rate of return perspective and the uncertainty of having half of your money in one farm. One farm, not even one. I have farm ground all over. One farm. That's very uncertain. And our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. We have to take a break here for Fox News. Dave@petzelfinancial.net. One more time, I will beg for calls. Perhaps we are needing to play some recordings for a while. I don't know. But if you don't have any questions in a market gone wild, it's really not gone wild, gone normal, then maybe it's time to take a little break. But I think people will call. So 580-5436, Dave@petzelfinancial.net. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzel. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's place to talk. Is Money Matters with Dave Petzel on 580 KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello, welcome, and thanks for joining us. 580-5436 is our number, 580-KIDO. You know, we talk about how slow the economy is, and it should be faster. In fact, some people actually say we're not growing, right? But we are. But GDP is coming in better than expected. The last two revisions for second quarter have been up. Well, that's positive. That's clearly positive. So as we look at this, we look at things in isolation and we see the things that we want to see, right? Like if we're pro-growth, we see that, but then we miss maybe a bad number with home sales. Or the employment, oh, isn't that great? So we look at just the headline number. We don't want to stop and say, but wages aren't growing. People are working part-time, not full-time. Things like that. So again, we have our own bias to grab the data points that we want to gravitate towards. Now, since, again, we've been kind of talking about this a lot today, right, that we're just emotional people. And so we tend to also, we forget that because of that, or if you will, our inherent wiring, that we think negatively You know, again, and I often phrase it this way, is it's great if you're in a jungle to be worried about everything around you. You should be, because things will kill you. Lots of things will kill you in a jungle. We're just poorly equipped for jungle living. Very dangerous. But markets aren't. Modern life isn't. It's not inherently dangerous. There's not a tiger around every corner. There's not even a bear around every corner. But we're wired that way. And so as we look at things, we think about our own finances, we worry as if we had some kind of ability to foresee all the problems. So we see them negatively. We see the world so super negative all of the time. And so when we tend to see data points, we don't tend to see them from a growth perspective. We see it from negative. For example, we don't see the world as abundant at all. We see it as limited. Well, if that person has $1 million, I can't. If that person has $1 billion, they stole it from somebody else. They don't deserve that much. The haves and the have-nots. Always not really the overall is growing. Even as, for example, Pope Francis, and I'm not going to jump on the anti-Pope bandwagon here of, you know, he's really just, you know, so like super liberal or something. Look, he's a religious leader. He's an important person. He's entitled to have opinions. But one of the opinions that I've had that I find interesting is that he, for example, talks about opening the doors to immigration and kind of in some ways kind of talks down the idea of capitalism. Again, I'm not wanting to get into a Pope Francis argument. I'm just saying, when we think about things like that, why does everybody want to move here? I mean, everybody. If it's so immoral here for capitalism, self-serving, invisible hand stuff, why does everybody want to come here? Why do the oppressed want to come here? Why do the poor want to come to such an awful place as the United States? Right? I mean, so there is something in freedom, in self-expression that is beautiful, graceful, generous, enticing, encouraging, lovely. So, but when we see that as limiting, and we don't see it as everybody is growing, it limits our thinking, doesn't it? And that's not just a picture of poor thinking. It drives our thought process as to if everybody sees that the economy is just not good enough, that unemployment is really that bad, and this is going to kill it, this is going to kill it, that's going to kill it, everything, then we can't see that companies, corporations, the great corporations of the world, are making adjustments to new rules, regulations, etc., and are continuing to be profitable in spite of it's not growing perfectly, in spite of the guy in the White House, in spite of the Congress, whatever it is we see. If we see the world as limited instead of abundant, I think it really twists our investment thought process. It makes us hide our investments. And we just don't get out there. And we worry and we fuss over little things. This past week, right, Hillary Clinton tweets out some kind of nonsense about drug pricing. Boom. Now biotech stocks go down. You know what? There are so many people alive today because companies invented amazing things. Stunning stuff. And you know why they did it? They did it to make money. Now, corporations did this. The government did virtually zero of anything, of any value, ever. Ever. The best thing government can do is get out of the way of the individual striving to improve his and his family's lot in life. But governments don't. They grow and grow and grow and grow, and they create more regulation and stop that. So I get that it seems really hard to have hepatitis C and have a drug cost so much money. I get that. It is hard. Really hard. It's so hard. But at the same time, do we just want people to die? Because companies won't do this. We can't stop innovation, creativity. That's what does it for personal freedom. Capitalism, that's what does it. That's what does it. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Let's go to George in Boise. George, thanks for calling.
Good morning, Dave. How are you doing?
I'm awesome, George. Thank you. Thanks for calling, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Glad to do it. I guess Jim and I are going to hold the phone today. That's the only ones I know of that called you. Is that right?
No. I think a fellow named Doug from Payette called.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, I missed a good bit of what you were saying because I was busy around the house.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was off the charts brilliant today. I'm sorry you missed it. You'll have to go back and catch it on a podcast.
I believe you. I got you recorded. I'll listen to you later on my way.
I know you do, George. That's why I was teasing you.
Hey, listen, patience. That's an interesting thing. I remember back, I guess I'd been listening to you for about 10 years or so when the 2001 stock market crash came.
Yes.
And I was handling a little play money account, you know, so I was interested in it and listened to it. So anyway, when all my investing experience with a few bad examples or experiences rather, the market did nothing but go up, and then all of a sudden it's going down. So when it started going down, I tolerated it for several months, you know, and finally it was beginning to affect my retirement fund, mm-hmm. which I determined what it was invested in. And I just bailed out of it completely, you know, just to stop the hemorrhage. And that went along well. And I waited, I think it was three months, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just started, buying back in a little bit at a time. I mean, like
mm-hmm.
every week.
Mm-hmm.
I would buy back in. Well, this is like 2001. It's the summer of 2001.
Good for you.
Yeah. Well, that was a year and a half later. The market finally stopped going down and started back up. And
October of 2002, it finally stopped dropping, yes.
I bought back in, and it just kept on dropping. And so I thought I was really patient, you know, I mean, months and then weeks, you know, and
mm-hmm.
waiting for a while and all that, but none of that mattered. So the thing that occurs to me is like the patience, that the better thing to do if the market's going down, it seems like every time that's happened, I have always, I mean, my little stocks just dribble down and dribble down, you know, until finally I either sell at a loss or just barely a gain. And the important thing is to figure out how do you tell when the thing's going back up? That seems to be the biggest, if you're going to play that game. I'm assuming when you were talking about active versus passive investing that you're opting for just buy great companies and then forget about them.
Well, to a degree, yeah. Let's say that's the Warren Buffett approach, right?
Yeah, right.
Buy them and hold them forever. Okay. But he's done really well with that. So I have to say, I'm not putting that down. But I prefer the long-term approach that says the world changes, and I don't have to hold on to the ABC company forever.
Mm-hmm.
It might reach a point where the price is so high relative to its outlook, it probably should be sold. But that's not a market timing decision. That's a company-by-company outlook position.
Mm-hmm.
Totally different. And so what I mean by active management is what I do mean is it picking individual companies versus just the index. And I will go through that again. I know we've talked about it a lot, George. And,
oh, sure.
But, so I'm not going to today, but I will go through it because of an email. I'll go through it next week. But it is it's a little different dynamic there. But you're absolutely right. I do believe in long term. And what you're speaking to is the epitome of the problem. You can get one side of the trade right and feel like a genius. When do you get back in?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's so hard. It's so hard to nail it. Are you right when you got out at 12,000 on the Dow? It ran to 18. Are you right because it's pulled back below 17? No, you're still wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You're just plain wrong. You know, it's the idea that you're going to be able to time the market is why I tend to lean towards the buy and hold forever because human nature isn't going to do that anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Right? People just won't. And so we do have to try to pull ourselves away from that.
Yeah, well, when you talk about patience, it seems like you're talking about maybe trading in the stock market, whether that involves days or weeks or even years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because there's some things, like we've talked about Chipotle before. I've called and talked to you about that. You know,
yeah.
How long can a gourmet burrito keep going up? You know? But it just keeps going up.
How long can a great cup of coffee go up? Right. That's Starbucks. It's the same thing. It is right. It's a simple thing. George, thank you so much. I'm going to have to take a break here. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
I sure appreciate your call. You have a great day.
You bet. See you later. Bye.
Bye. Bye. And we got to take a quick break here. We will be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436. Money Matters with Dave Petzo on 580 KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Oh, gee whiz. Jim, I am so sorry, pal. Hang on, I'll talk to you off air here, but we are literally out of time today. I hope everybody has a great weekend. I thoroughly enjoyed today. Take care, and we'll talk to you live next week. Thanks for joining us.
Money Matters is brought to you in part by Petzo Financial Consultants and Mountain West Bank, Idaho's community bank with offices in Boise, Ketchum, and Coeur d'Alene. Dave Petzo, the host of Money Matters, is a certified financial planner professional and an investment advisor representative with Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated. Registered representative securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Investment advisor representative Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated and Petzo Financial Consultants are not affiliated companies. These are the opinions of Dave Petzo and are based on information from sources believed to be reliable but may change as information changes or becomes outdated. Nor should any opinion contained herein be construed or considered as a solicitation to buy or sell any particular investment product. Indices mentioned are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. Asset allocation and diversification strategies cannot fully guarantee against loss. The past performance does not guarantee future results.